Welcome to it. It's Tribe. In full swing of 2018, there's so much content coming through from theatre productions, film, various disciplines that bring to life that which we need to look at through, you know, a glass lens, perhaps. Not the keyhole in the door, a glass lens. We need to magnify it. And so joining us in studio right now is actress and renowned director Kujo Green. She'll be joined by award-winning actress Deneo Lesenga as they present together this weekend at the Pop Arts Theatre in Johannesburg what is titled Mirage. Now, to bring into perspective, Mirage is a sketch comedy piece about the fabulous, stylish and independent Cyril Maid of Honor, Mandisa Sithole, who, while she's busy creating an unforgettable wedding experience for close friends and clientele, everyone around her, especially her nagging mother, wonder why her day is not come and when her day will be. But to bring us back into context, welcome, Kujo Green. Kujo, good to have you in studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Renowned actress. I've seen Tortif.
Yes.
I've seen many other productions. Phenomenal to be so active in theatre and drama on both sides of the coin. What are your preferences? To act or to direct? Or do you have a combination? Is that a fair question?
To act or to direct, which is the one? I actually don't have a favorite. I must say, so I went to WITS to study drama.
Right.
So to study the art of performing, and it only happened around 2011 when I was asked to direct a piece for a festival, for the Human Rights and Social Justice Festival.
Right, part that's of coming up again.
And so I directed The Revolution Between My Thighs, and so I kind of thought, hey, Kujo, you actually have an eye for this, so why don't you try it out? And then I just kept on directing other shows, and then people came and asked me that I direct, and then I directed Have You Seen Zandile as well, which did very, very well. And so, yeah, I think because I can create my own work, I prefer to direct. Acting is a bit of a difficult, kind of venture if you are alone. If it needs a third
Absolutely.
Eye, it needs an outside eye.
Certainly.
So because I'm on the outside, then I can have perspective and sort of an orientation of the show that we're creating. So it's easier, I suppose, I gravitate towards directing than I do towards acting.
Okay, so within this gravitation, isn't it a natural force? Because when it comes to particularly being an actor or actress in the theatrical world,
yes.
It is quite difficult to have continuous work.
Yes.
So you have to be a self-creator, and essentially this creative
Completely.
Is a force that drives you.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I'm in quite a privileged position in the sense that I get to teach what I practice. So I'm a lecturer of acting at AFDA. I teach second years, and it's been quite a learning curve in the sense that you are reminded of the things that you had once learned, but how do we refine, how do we evolve these techniques, because times are moving and styles become different. People are honing their own kind of signatures. So what is mine? And I think that's been my question. Do I really want to have a signature? Do I want to have a recognizable little thing within the show that says, oh, that's a Kujo Green style? But I don't think I do. I don't think I do, really.
You don't think you want one?
No, I don't think I want one.
Okay, but that's quite interesting, because ultimately, when one creates a style or a certain way of acting, it could fall by the wayside if it's considered to be, you know,
it could be stagnant. It could be,
precisely.
Yeah. So I think for me, it is always interesting and fascinating to explore.
Okay.
To explore what other styles are there and how you can use the medium of theater to create work that is engaging, that is captivating, that gets people to talk and have conversations and dialogue. I think a lot of the times I've been titled as an activist, because a lot of the pieces that I have created have had some kind of social commentary on ills and social issues that we face. So it is important to be diverse, I suppose, as a director. I find that it's necessary. I find that it's quite a skill to be able to connect all different kinds of audience members, because you don't want the same kind of people coming to your pieces, but you do want them to come back, but with other diversified kind of
And you
audiences.
Also don't want to do the same pieces all the
of
time.
Of course not.
You need
of course
movement.
Not.
All right. So when you say you're an activist, and so it's been termed that,
yes.
I think we all are in a creative sense. When you really reach a certain space, you have to become that activist, because that social commentary and content is critical.
Right.
With that said, What are you active about when it comes to activism? What is close to your heart right now?
Oh, so trafficking has been on my heart for a very long time, since 2007.
Yeah.
And hence when I directed the Revolution Between My Thighs in 2011, it was a response to that. I think I had come across a newspaper article, and I, in the wake of 2010 and the World Cup that was coming, I was like, something has to be done.
Indeed.
We cannot be silent about this. So then I became an anti-trafficking in persons coordinator at World Hope SA. And so I traveled around the country just educating people about trafficking. And so the concern then at the time was for the young ones. So how do we move away from the notion of stranger danger and educate them around the fact that even your own grandmother, you know, because of poverty lines, can sell you off. And that was a trend. And that's a trend that has been happening throughout Africa, but that's a trend that happens throughout the world. So at the time, I was just like, oh, no, I think we're silent about this. I think we think it's just a European kind of dilemma and plague. But it is going to face us. And what are we going to do? What measures do we have in place? And so they were running around, I think, you know, in the government sector to try and pass a bill that would be able to persecute people who were found doing trafficking. So that has been on my heart for the longest time. And now it's kind of centered and moved. It hasn't necessarily moved too much away, but there are women issues. I am part of the My Body, My Space festival that is happening in Mpumalanga, which is a dance festival. And we're looking at the idea of the woman who is not documented, the woman who's not archived. So there's an organization that we've created called the Amamenemene, who are trying to completely suppress and repress and erase the idea of the feminine and the feminine power. So those are other issues that are really on my heart. How do we empower women? How do we make sure that they are present and visible and known as well? So where are the histories of Nonqawuse? Where are the histories of Mujaji? And written and proper, so that it becomes a curriculum, you know. So Queen Hoho as well, who was instrumental in stopping the wars between the Xhosas and the Khoisan. No one knows about that.
Thank you. Women for centuries have been suppressed. The knowledge, the indigenous knowledge of the goddess has been suppressed. And I think when that arises across the board, we will have a sentiment of understanding what this world could be. And we're moving into the sphere. Beautiful work. Stunning. As you can hear, ladies and gentlemen, Kujo Green in studio. Many conversations to be held. And of course, we're going to be unraveling the package of Mirage. Joining us in studio two, just to say good morning. Before we go into news headlines, we're going to delve into this conversation, is award-winning actress Dineo Lusenga. Dineo. that's what the press release says. Your award-winning actress, Dineo, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
I love the way you like, just take it, girl.
I receive.
Thank you, darling. Thank you. So, Dineo, you've worked with Kujo on this marvelous production. It really appeals to me. I haven't seen it yet, called Mirage. Kind of unpacking why society expects marriage to be everyone's desire. Do you want to get married, Dineo?
No.
Do you want to get married, Kujo?
Well, I plead the fifth on that one.
All right. Jelani Tulo, do I ask you again? Do you want to get married?
Not now, no.
Not now. All right. So with that said, what are your thoughts on marriage? I mean, marriage isn't particularly for everyone. And we're going to be discussing this particular play, Mirage, that is a sketch comedy piece. You know, they couldn't find a better way in bringing this topic to the fore through comedy. Because it is comedic when you learn to laugh. You learn to laugh at yourself and the marriage that happens. These stereotypes that we fulfill.
Yes.
Tick. Got the diploma. Tick. Yeah. Marriage. Right?
Yes.
And then things unravel. Okay. Arrived right now. You've arrived just on time. Joining us in studio, two fabulous, fabulous women. Both renowned in their own capacity, but when they come together, you can imagine the sway. All right. We've got renowned director and award-winning actress, Kujo Green, and phenomenal actress and multi, I would say, platform performer when it comes to acting, radio, various others, Dineo Lusenga in studio. They're together in studio to talk about their unique production showcasing at Pop Art this weekend. It's called Mirage. Now, the Mirage is really a discussion on why society expects marriage to be everybody's desire. All right. Dineo, Kujo, let's get into this whole piece.
Yes.
How did it come about? Because obviously it's a very passionate collaboration. So first, personally, the idea of marriage, you're both not married, right? Yes.
I plead the fifth.
You plead the fifth, yes. All right? And with that said, then let's move forward into the beauty of this production. I think the relevance of it coming together. How did it come together?
So in 2015, I approached Kutso because I'd always wanted to work with her. So I was like, listen, nice. I have this text that I want us to do.
And she's so open.
Because I had seen, have you seen Zandile?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought, oh my God, if anyone were to direct me on stage, it has to be Kutso.
Uh-huh.
So I went with her with a text. At the time, it was Sunday on the Rocks, which is an international text. So we spoke about it and we thought, oh, you know what? Even getting rights for this text is going to take forever, so let's park this project. And Kutso said, listen, how about we workshop our own text? How about we write something of our own? Because when are we ever going to get published as writers?
For real, I love the fact that that happened, right? Mm.
So then at the time, we felt like, yes, that's the right thing to do, but do we know what we want to say? Because that's also important, right? Mm. So that was back in 2015, so we parked the whole thing. And only last year, so 2017.
17.
Yeah. God. Time flies. Jeez. That in itself is a mirage.
Yeah, right? I don't know what 2016 was.
Yeah. 2016 is a blur.
What? Let's be safe. Let's say 2019 because the clock is ticking.
Yeah, right. 2019. So in 2018, I then called Kutso. I was like, listen, I think I finally know what I want to say, but I don't know if it would resonate with you too. So let's meet. And we met, and that's how Mirage came about. And we started talking about the idea of marriage. I'm not married.
How did that come about? So, was it one of the topics? Because, you know, there's always that process, the underlying content that moves through.
So, oh my God. Okay. So I had been with someone for a very long time, for about 6 years. And I think in those 6 years, I knew that I wasn't going to get married to this person. And that for me was concerning, and it was concerning to my friends as well, and maybe to my mother, who didn't want to say much about it. But it's that, you know, thing in the background and in the back of everyone's minds that, wow, you guys have been together for 6 years. When is this
happening?
Right.
Yeah.
And we, both of us had to, we're not together anymore, but at the time we had to have a frank conversation about where this was going. Are we ever going to get married? And I had always been upfront that marriage for me is not on the cards.
That was always with you.
That's always with me.
That's kind of progressive as a South African girl, right? So how did that happen?
I've had to do a lot of introspection to kind of acknowledge where that comes from.
Okay.
And I think a part of it comes from this is getting personal.
All right. Don't need to get personal. You don't you know, apologies about that.
There's nothing wrong with that. And I can just summarize it quickly. My mom and my dad are divorced. My grandmother, so my maternal side, my grandfather died when I was very young, actually before I was even born, when my mom was still young, so I don't know him.
Right.
So I grew up, I was raised by my grandmother, so there was no father figure in that family. And then my mom, that marriage didn't work out. So, and growing up, it's never been on the cards. I've never seen, you know, an example of
that.
Of
a marriage that works. Around you, there was a lot of decaying marriages. Right.
And but my aunts got married and they're happy and that's fine. But I think growing up, coming into myself, I realized, no, this is really not for me, and it's okay. I think the play came from a place of saying society needs to stop imposing that on people, because every time I say I don't want to get married, I get lectures from people from the church, and you know, and you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but so am I as a black woman who chooses not to get married. So I think that's where it came from.
Yeah,
that is quite empowering. Let's talk of the premise of Mirage being exactly that. How do you portray the opinions? Obviously, comedy is an accessible route.
Yeah.
And what is the without giving it all away, because there are two more performances today and tomorrow, the absolute statements?
So, one of the absolute statements is that my life as a black woman is not an audition for marriage. So you...
Yeah.
I didn't clap once.
We can clap again.
Yes.
So, I mean, when Danielle came to me about this, she had been sort of engaging with quite a couple of conversations that were happening on Facebook. I think there are pages literally just designated for marriage or unmarried people or whatever it is. But people are talking about marriage and about partnership. Yeah. And for me, that's really the crux of it. Like, how do we do partnership? And so because we have come to normalize and think that it's conventional, that the only way to do partnership and to do it right is to get married. And I am of a different view. I am of two people who can come together and speak about how they want to do marriage or how they want to do partnership is really up to them. So this idea that, like, as Black women, so the story does focus on one perspective. We could have gone everywhere with it. We could have been inclusive of everyone and everything, but I think that would have diluted the message. So we decided to hone it on one particular individual, being Mandisa Sithole, who is quite a contradiction in a sense, that she is out there designing all these weddings for people, getting people together, you know, in an institution that is so so deep and it stems from such a long tradition, but she does not see herself becoming that. She doesn't see herself subscribing to that institution.
The irony is beautiful. She fills the gap by participating without fully committing.
Completely. So it was very important for us to explore. So how do other people do partnership?
Yeah.
What are the perceptions around partnership? And why are there stigmas around people who, for example, I know a couple who literally they are together and they are for each other, but they live in separate homes. So,
oh, you see, I'm so into that.
You know,
I need my space.
Completely. And call when you want to come visit. Okay. Don't just walk in. So if sort of like the majority hears that kind of thing, it's like, what are you doing? That can't be real. That can't last.
And I get so frustrated at the majority's stereotypical vision just being planted on you without thoughts, without processes,
and that majority
gets
to dictate how the rest of us should live. And I think what we were trying to say is, did you know that you have options?
Yeah.
Did you know that? Yeah. Did you know that that's on the table, that you can be with someone without, you know, that commitment of marriage and going and signing?
Because commitment is that soul commitment,
right,
essentially, right? Because
right.
You want somebody, and I think as girls all feel this, and I'm sure the men feel this too, if you want somebody with you, you know that they're there with you because they want to, not because of an obligation to some degree.
Yes, right. You don't have to question that they're there for you. They're there.
Yeah.
And you've spoken. You are in this relationship with that person.
Yeah.
So this idea that we need to officialize our partnership by getting married is, again, what Mandisa Sithole has to sort of like grapple with and wrestle with as an idea.
Do you go deep in the sense of almost the contamination of this officialdom of marriage? Because so many people have spoken about getting married has ruined everything. Somehow there's some hidden kind of ethereal element of effect that happens when people commit at large officially.
Would you say that's Ntombi?
I would say it's Ntombi and Mom as well.
So the,
I would say
the
two characters who are in the piece kind of speak to that idea of the contamination. And like, so Mandisa Sithole's mom didn't quite love the father when they, she had to learn to love dad. The father.
How many women had to?
She had to learn. And she comes from a particular and societal construction, right?
Yeah.
Where it wasn't about love. Where love as a concept was not necessarily something that was understood. It was about financial, it was about survival. You need to get a man in order to be able to survive in life. So that's the kind of era that Mandisa's mom comes from.
And that is so critical.
Yeah.
That is absolutely critical, because women weren't empowered financially. We weren't empowered to do anything.
Yes.
Even through literacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ultimately. So it's a conditioning of suppressing womanhood, essentially.
Yeah.
But more than that, I think, you know, it expands itself from, I mean, look at the family breakup that's happened with the high amounts of divorce.
Mm.
Do you think, though, through doing this production, obviously the research and I think the audience involvement and reaction, that there is a progressive movement of letting go of the shackles? Is there a surmountable amount of people thinking differently?
I think so.
I think even with we've only been on for two nights, but people watch and they relate so much to the text. People know of other people they think should come and watch, you know, this production. Just on Friday, one of the audience members we had came to us after the play and said, my cousin, who's my age, I think she's about 25, she was like, you know, she just got married and her sister is pregnant, but she's not getting married. So the pressure from the family for her to get married because she's pregnant, and it comes with, wow. Oh, look at your sister is married without a child. Yeah. You're pregnant, still living in our house. Who's going to marry you?
What a disgrace.
What a disgrace, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are feeling like they know other people who could be liberated by this production.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we were trying to do.
And we go into questioning, like, what is a virtuous woman? So just because that woman is not, that sister is pregnant but not married, that makes her less virtuous than the sister that is married. And I think we, oh my gosh, and as black people, we need to stop this sort of crucifying of women who decide
and women
and
who crucify women
completely who decide and choose other alternatives. Like I get really antsy.
Yes.
You know?
But it is that. It's saying you have alternatives.
Yeah.
Did you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the other things that we're trying to address, I remember when Kuja and I met for the first time, is I remember like being 10 years old, and this is again black mothers, you know, and we can only speak for black mothers because we're black.
Yeah.
We don't know how it's done in other regions, right?
But absolutely,
you know, you're raised and you're 10 years old, and your mother or your grandmother is saying, you know, you can't sleep until midday, or you can't sleep until 10 because who's going to marry you?
Yeah,
you know, a girl cannot sleep until this time. You have to wake up and learn to cook and learn to clean the stoop. And I'm thinking,
you can't eat out of the pot because then you won't get married. Like, don't eat out of the pot.
Right. Superstitions.
But I'm thinking, I'm 10. I don't even think I have met. No, I know for a fact I haven't met the man I'm going to marry. I'm not even thinking that far. I'm worried about my homework that I have to submit on Monday.
Thank you. Why am I worrying about this?
Why am I thinking about someone who's going to marry me 20 years from now?
I can tell you both now, and I think you agree with me, as much as it is critical to talk from your personal experience. I think for most women, the majority across races, across culture, across religions, pressure's there.
Completely.
And it's unraveling.
Yeah.
Right? And this whole process is trying to equalize, and it's the power of and poignancy of work like this that pushes it forward.
Mm.
How important is it for theater, for works of art, to push these themes forward? How pivotal is it in society?
I think it's very important. I mean, there's that saying, life imitates art or art imitates life.
Right.
And I think we find ourselves in the smack bam in the middle of that conundrum or that saying.
Mm.
And what we find a lot, again, with people who speak to us afterwards, is that people are relating. People are identifying. Mm. So yes, again, theater becomes a mirror to society.
Mm. Mm.
It becomes a mirror to our own lives.
Yeah.
So we may not necessarily see the changes and the effects that the show has had on people, but we definitely know that somebody goes home and they literally sit with what they've just experienced.
Mm.
And so this is why I think the show, the way it's designed as well, and I mean, credit to the both of us for creating it, is that it's so immersive that you, at some point, you feel like you're a part of it, because the structure in its design is such that you feel in, and literally we draw you completely. And by the time it's done, it's almost like you've just had an out-of-body experience.
Yeah,
and it's like,
fabulous.
What did I just go through?
Yeah.
And then you start questioning, and then you start like reflecting with other people. Some people have just literally just gone silent in their seats for a while.
Mm.
Other people are leaving the theater, and they're sitting with what they've just gone through. So I think that's the
a
power of
talking
theater.
After this?
Oh, they are so talking.
They have a lot to talk about.
I'm sure they are talking.
All right, ladies, this is phenomenal. I mean, there's so much we can really divert into, but I think the beauty of this production is that it's current right now. It is this evening at 8 p.m. at Pop Theatre, correct?
Art,
and
yeah,
Pop Arts Theatre.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And tomorrow
at 3:30.
At 3:30.
Yeah.
What happens from here? Is there a way of taking across the country? Is this the hope? Is this? I mean,
that
obviously,
is, that's
always
the plan.
Hope.
Not even
that's
hope. But
that's
the
plan.
Yes.
But after Pop Art Theatre, we are trying to we're in conversations with other theatres to take it to their spaces.
Beautiful.
So yeah, we really want
see it thriving.
It to
beautiful.
Live.
Thank
so
you.
Necessary.
Thank you.
And lastly, and not leastly, just quickly from both of you, if someone is considering storytelling as a career, because essentially this is the package, what are the most important lessons you've learned about the business or something you'd like to share for them to take with on their journey?
Go to school. That's the first thing because I think.
But what if school is, even with fees must fall and then access to food?
School.
Is there different kinds of schooling?
Yeah. So school doesn't necessarily mean go to UCT, go to WITS, go to AFDA, right? Nice. It means find out. There are market labs. There are smaller groups where people can learn how to write, act, direct.
Nice.
Just get the education first.
It is important.
Okay.
And then speak from your heart. Speak your truth. Speak your truth first. I think once you're finding, as you're finding your voice, you need to come from a place of self. And then
it's
you can come from
that.
A place of collective and the community and what are the stories out there. But yeah, that's been my lesson.
That's not an easy one. It's a good lesson, right? It's to find that voice. We're all on this journey and it doesn't matter what age you find it.
Yeah.
Ladies, it's been delightful. I think it's really beautiful and engaging and being so open. Thank you. Pop Art Theatre is on social media. You can find it all out. I've had the ladies in the studio before. Phenomenal theatre space that, you know, really gives a space for up and coming productions and thought leadership. Yeah. Great. What are you both up to today?
I have a meeting at 10:30 and then I'm going to sleep to get ready, well, rest before the show later.
Right.
That's
on.
It. I'm going to go write my other piece. I'm going to try finish it.
This is a woman in action. Another woman, married woman. Thank you so much.